Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Richard Salzman. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The District Court acted as if this was a bench trial, weighing the evidence, resolving disputes, and virtually all inferences in favor of the defendant. While there are many examples of the District Court improperly finding facts, one of the clearest relates to her treatment of a younger male comparator in the record, Sam Fairchild. The District Court found, as a factual matter, that he was in many ways a real asset to the transportation practice, so that it was understandable why he was retained instead of Judith Barnett. But Mr. Fairchild had not covered costs in over 2 years. He had been rated by Patrick Kelly as the lowest performance possible. He had been on a performance improvement plan in the months preceding the RIF. He had a lousy attitude, as determined by the auditors, who labeled him a problem child.
I thought Mr. Kelly's testimony was that the explanation for the RIF was driven less by concerns of employee compatibility and more about the fit with the future of the transportation group.
Yes, Your Honor. That was his testimony, and that was, again, found to be a fact by the District Court.
Was it disputed?
Well, it was disputed, Your Honor. It absolutely was disputed on this record. Mr. Kelly looked at performance data and created a chart in which he measured performance data. He also measured fit, and he
remind me where Fairchild fit in the fit analysis.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Fairchild received 3 checks on fit on the chart. However, he had not, according to the supervisor, Jim Miller, been working on airline or airport related work. In fact, Mr. Miller testified that Fairchild by far spent most of his time on work that was unrelated to the airline industry, the Amex case. So the fact that Mr. Kelly kept a male, younger male performer who was not working on airline related work, who had a terrible performance record, and who cost significantly more than Judith Barnett. His salary was, before a reduction in his salary, $130,000 more than Ms. Barnett's, and after a temporary reduction in his salary, roughly $50,000 more than Ms. Barnett's. Judith Barnett, in contrast, had an excellent performance record in all categories. And so a jury, we believe, could certainly question whether or not a restructuring that was designed to turn around a practice and make it profitable and worthwhile would keep several men, and Mr. Fairchild is just one example, several men who were lousy performers.
Again, the question, though, was fit, wasn't it, for the future plans of the entity rather than performance evaluation?
Yes, Your Honor. And if we look at, even if we look at fit, there were 5 men who were rated the same.
I have a procedural question. Are we using these folks' names now? You used Mr. Fairchild's name. I couldn't remember if he was one that had been redacted or not.
Because if you are, Your Honor, I do apologize. I don't know whether this proceeding now will be considered, whether the oral argument. I cannot refer to names from this point forward.
If you could just identify without referring to names.
You are correct, and I apologize for that, Your Honor. There were 4 men who received the same rating on fit as Ms. Barnett, but lower ratings on performance or other areas.
What was the category that you're calling fit?
It's called skills and capabilities. It's the second category. And again, the District Court said, as a factual matter, well, we were wrong in saying that that was fit. But here's what Mr. Kelly testified. Mr. Kelly, who they say was the decision maker, and this is at Joint Appendix 311. He said that the second category was intended to assess, quote, how valuable their skill set was, how relevant to what we were trying to sell in the marketplace. Now, if that's not fit, I don't know what fit is. But the District Court said this whole argument that we made is entirely irrelevant because we say that that second category was fit and it wasn't fit. But a jury could hear the testimony of the decision maker saying, I'm trying to determine how relevant what their skills were to what we're trying to sell in the marketplace as fit. That is fit. And for the District Court to say it's not fit is substituting herself for the jury. And she did it repeatedly. She did it with respect to men who had worse performance records. She did it with respect to men who were on the RIF list and then taken off. And Judith Barnett put on. And she did it with respect to the wholly self-serving testimony that Patrick Kelly was the sole, only decision maker in the face of a record that showed that there were several senior executives who were evaluating this reduction in force, who met repeatedly.
But there's no evidence that those senior officials had anything to do with Barnett's inclusion, right? I mean, that came afterwards. They looked at lists that considered others, but not Barnett. There's no evidence linking them directly.
Judge Griffith, I agree that there's no admission. I don't agree that there's no evidence.
What evidence would you set on that?
Well, the evidence, Your Honor, first of all, is that Mr. Kelly and Mr. Tyndale, who was the COO, I believe, or CFO, who was one of the two senior executives who had organized the RIF meetings, discussed with Mr. Kelly in the week or so before Judith Barnett was placed on the RIF list who to include and what he was trying to accomplish. Now, undoubtedly, both of them testified, we didn't talk about Judith Barnett.
They did talk about others, though, right?
They did talk about others, absolutely. And Mr. Moynihan and Mr. Tyndale had been responsible for naming others. So Jim Miller testified that one of the men who was included on the RIF, I won't...
When in the decision-making process did they decide that Mr. Kelly or whoever decide that the metric by which to conduct the RIF was going to be fit?
Well,
this group lost money, a significant amount of money, right?
Yeah, and they were considering performance all along. If you look at the chart that they put together back in February, it looks at revenue, it looks at who's covering costs, it looks at who's dedicated to the practice, because there were several men who were barely coming into the office and who were not contributing anything, who stayed. But they certainly say at the end, fit is what mattered. Then they said, when they were trying to justify the termination of an older man who made it on the list, they said, Judith Barnett fits. This guy doesn't fit, but Judith Barnett fits. And that's why we can justify getting rid of this older gentleman. But then when they're trying a week later to justify getting rid of Judith Barnett, she no longer fits. What doesn't fit is the fit explanation. And that's what a jury could find. But the district court never let the jury have that chance. And we have this in the context of a situation in which the CEO and Mr. Tyndale looked at age data.
Remind me, didn't Mr. fellow you started with, didn't he have significant airline experience?
He did, Your Honor.
Yeah, and she didn't, right?
Well, she brought in...
She had one project.
Khalifa Airlines. She brought in an airline client. She worked on that client.
Why doesn't that explain...
Because there were other men who did not have significant airline experience, Your Honor. There is the fellow from who was working on a China trade practice, who Mr. Kelly went out of his way...
Isn't that your stronger argument?
I think it is a very strong argument. I think
we
have several...
Why didn't you start with that?
Tactical error, Your Honor.
Spending all this time with the fellow who had airline experience.
Well, Your Honor, there are several men who did not have a focus on airline work. We think that the first man didn't have a focus, as is, was admitted by the supervisor. But George Gao is another... Excuse me, Your Honor. There's another man who was not...
Hard to do that, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor, and I apologize. I hope it's the last time. I will certainly try. There's a fellow with China experience who really did not have significant airline-related experience either.
He had more airline experience than she did. I mean, neither of them had great airline.
I don't actually know that that's true, Your Honor. I think, you know, Miss Barnett had brought in Khalifa Airlines and had worked on that project successfully. And the point is they found a different home for the fellow with China-related experience, and really went to significant efforts to accomplish that and didn't do the same for Ms. Barnett. So again, that is...
I thought they tried. They approached another practice group and they said no, or another one, yes, but at a significantly reduced salary. That's not exactly no effort.
It was a very close to a no, Your Honor. It was, we've talked about it. We don't think this is a good fit. We don't think that, you know.
Would she have accepted a substantially reduced salary?
A substantially reduced? I don't know, Your Honor. I think it depended on how reduced it would be.
Wouldn't be a matter of record in any event what she would accept.
That's right, Your Honor. It's not a matter of record. But all of this are, you know, certainly a jury could see their explanation. We don't dispute that. The question is whether a jury would have to see their explanation. And the type of inferences that the district court concluded, for example, that Patrick Kelly never looked at the age chart, that's the kind of testimony that juries reject every day. That's the kind of testimony like, I didn't know that there were drugs in the glove compartment. So, you know, you can't convict me because I didn't know. This was a chart that they put together to use in the RIF. And he was brought in to implement the last piece of the RIF into meetings that had been occurring in which they used this chart. And he testifies, I had no idea that this chart showing the ages of the employees was in existence. Now, a jury might believe that, but a jury might not. And that is the jury's call.
Okay, we've actually talked you over your time, so we'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal if necessary.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning.
Good morning, counsel.
Allow me to address, I suppose, the first issue Mr. Salzman raised about the gentleman who was retained. First of all, let me say that he was 49 years old. He was not significantly younger than Ms. Barnett for these purposes. Ms. Barnett was 57 or 58 at the time, depending on the birthday.
Is this the fellow with New Zealand airline industry experience?
This is the fellow who was a senior level in the Department of Transportation, and while he was doing some work with American Express, there is no question that he was pitching work with Mr. Miller having to do with airline and airport clients, and he had significant...
She had some airline experience.
She had one small bit of airline experience, mm-hmm. but there's no question in this record that Ms. Mardet...
What about the fellow with the China portfolio?
Exactly what I was going to address. The gentleman with the China portfolio is, I think, an excellent example of why fit was exactly what was going on here. If you take a look at the chart that Mr. Miller and Mr. Kelly put together, first of all, let me say this was not a chart that was put together for Mr. Kelly to make decisions based on. Mr. Kelly knew nothing about the transportation group. He was the head of the IT, the information technology practice. He was designated as the person to come in and make this transport practice profitable. That was his role. He came in, he talked with Miller. That was his first conversation when they came up with this chart. And Kelly was just absorbing information. He knew nothing about any of these people. He wanted a download of what these folks did, what they didn't do, so that then he could make whatever additional decisions he would make. It was not a chart that was made, and there's no evidence in the record, despite what Ms. Barnett wants to say, there's no evidence in the record that that chart was used to make Mr. Kelly's decisions. He was getting information. And in the skills and capabilities...
Well, what was the purpose of the chart based on the record?
It was, as Mr. Kelly testified, it was to help him understand what these people were doing.
I'm not sure I'm getting the line between what you're saying it wasn't there for and what it was there for.
Well,
he was learning what they were doing so he could make decisions, right?
Well, he was learning.
So if the chart was to benefit him in learning about them, then wasn't it benefiting him in making decisions?
It was perhaps benefiting him, but he didn't rely on all of the information that he learned to make his decisions. I think that's the distinction. So if you look at the...
Does the record tell us when he decided that the animating feature of the RIF would be fit? When did that happen?
It happened, well, if you take a look at the chronology, mm-hmm. they had the skills and capabilities column on this chart that they devised in late September. Skills and capabilities, as Mr. Miller testified with Ms. Barnett, where she got two checks next to trade,
right.
meant that she was a good person in trade, he said in his deposition, but not in aviation. That's number one. the gentleman with the China practice got two checks under skills and capabilities next to China. They are the only two people who got two checks with a caveat. And those two people, as the district court said, were both affected by the RIF. The gentleman with the China and airline experience.
Doesn't this all sound like fact-based inquiries that we let triers of fact?
No, and here's why I believe that not to be true. Because at the end of the day, what I think Ms. Barnett is asking for is to have this court accept inferences that are unreasonable. We all know that on summary judgment, the non-movement gets the benefit of inferences that are reasonable. Mm-hmm. The problem here is that if you look at the actual facts, there's no dispute that Mr. Kelly made the decision, that he made it based on fit, that Ms. Barnett...
There's no dispute that Kelly... I mean, I thought there... You have Tyndale and Moynihan are involved in the process, right?
They're involved...
They're involved in the RIF, right?
No. They're involved...
Well, they're involved in the decision that we've got to do something with this group.
Correct.
We're bleeding there.
That's right. That's what they were involved in. They were involved in early February, late January.
They were involved in names. Names were presented to them.
Names were presented...
I mean, it wasn't just a general delegation. Mr. Kelly, go fix this and then report back to us what you've done, right?
Yes, it was, though. See, at the beginning, when they got involved and they were working with Miller and this working group was going on, they had a meeting in February, April, two in September. You're right, names were being passed along, and Moynihan and Tyndale were part of that. Then Kelly came in. They had grappled, this isn't really in the briefing, but it was before the district court, they had grappled with a number of people who would take over this practice. There are emails in the record evidence that say, well, we'll have so-and-so take it over. Oh, he didn't want to take it over. So-and-so else will do it. He didn't want to do it. Finally, they get Kelly. That was late September. Things changed at that point going forward. Kelly came in, he talked with Miller about the folks in the practice, and he decided, look, four people have already been decided they're going to go out the door. And those four people are clear on the list that Kelly and Miller came up with. It says, finish process ASAP, as to those four people, or counsel out ASAP. Then Kelly said, he's continuing to look at the practice. He comes to the United States. He meets with the folks in the practice. And the testimony says that when he finished his meeting with Ms. Barnett, he turned to Mr. Miller after she left and said, how does she fit with what we're doing going forward? And the answer is she didn't fit with what they were doing forward. Her practice was incredibly different. As she had said to them all along, she had indicated to PA multiple times over her 3 year or so tenure with the organization, she didn't fit with the transportation practice. She wanted to leave the transportation practice.
What about the chart that Tyndale came up with? It seems to me that's one reason you're so adamant that keeping Mr. Tyndale away from this. He's got this chart with ages on it. Isn't there a reasonable inference from that age was a factor?
I don't think so at all. And I think the problem is there are two problems with drawing that inference, that age was a factor.
It may not be the best explanation, but it's not an unreasonable one to say if management's putting together a list of people who are going to be RIFed and you put your age down, that might be a factor in their decision.
If there was any connection between viewing the chart and the person who actually made the decision, absolutely. I would say, I don't know what I would tell you. I would stand up here and come up with something that wouldn't make a lot of sense.
I disagreed with you on whether there could be fair inferences drawn about Mr. Tyndale's involvement, then that chart becomes highly significant.
I don't think you can disagree with me about Tyndale's involvement.
Well, but if we did, just hypothetically, if I disagreed with you, then that chart looms large, right?
What it does is it does paint a different picture, because then you have a decision maker.
A moment ago you said you don't know what you would say about that.
Well, it paints a different picture because you have a decision maker who actually saw a chart with ages on it.
Yeah.
But you'd have to look at the evidence, and I can't speculate. You'd have to look at the evidence about whether he ever used that chart, whether he just tossed it into his
belief box. Fact-based determinations.
Doesn't this conversation prove the point? You're straining so much to draw inferences or to suggest that some are not reasonably drawn and to struggle all over the record to find things that might or might not support you. That's precisely what when we have a case like that, that's precisely the kind of case that goes to a jury. The trial judge here, I mean, the most astonishing thing about this record when I read it was the trial judge was making a ton of findings. I didn't think were undisputed facts. Mm.
With all due respect, I would say that it's actually Ms. Barnett who's straining to come up with connections between dots that are completely extraneous. If you look at the direct evidence, Kelly made the decision. Everyone testified Kelly made the decision. There is no dispute on the record Kelly made it. There's also no dispute Kelly never saw that chart that somebody drafted up.
I'll
nobody
tell you what my
knows
problem
who.
Is you're resting a whole lot on fit. And it looks like to me, as I looked at the record, mm-hmm. it's highly disputed as to what that meant and how you got there. You are passing through that as if it doesn't exist. That's your whole case. We rested on fit, and I kept reading the record. I'm saying, where's the undisputed evidence on, one, what fit means, and, two, how they reached that determination, and it's not disputed? I can't find it, to be very honest with you.
Okay, so if I may try to address your concerns. One, in terms of what fit means, it's, I believe, clear in the testimony that fit meant experience in airlines and airports relating to the six core propositions that are listed in the reduction in force rationale memo. That was what fit meant to these people. There's no dispute that fit meant something else, and there's no dispute that Judith Barnett didn't have that experience. She said it herself many, many times.
Is it, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you if you weren't, is it not possible for a jury to look at that chart with the ages on it that Judge Griffith was asking you about and infer that age had some importance to the people who were involved in the RIF?
The reason I don't think it is that there is no linkage between that chart and Kelly, who the undisputed evidence says made the decision as to Ms. Barnett.
What do you say to the suggestion from opposing counsel that the jury just didn't have to believe that Kelly didn't see that chart? If Kelly was running the RIF and the chart was made, and the chart was made with reference to the, I mean, a while ago you told us, I thought, that the chart was made to give Kelly information. Now you're saying Kelly had no linkage to the chart.
They're two different charts.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's fine. I'm glad I can clear it up for you. And for the first chart that had the age column mm-hmm. was a chart that was created in February.
Okay.
Kelly never saw that chart. There's no question.
How do we know that he never saw that chart?
He testified he never saw it, and there's no other evidence.
Does the jury have to believe him?
The jury can't find a fact where there is no evidence to support that fact.
You don't know much about juries.
We would have.
I mean, that would seem to be something where assigning that burden is not an automatic matter in the law. But again, the chart was made with something to do with the RIF process, was it not?
It was made. Yes and no, I would say, Your Honor. It was made the chart was made in February when Tyndale and Moynihan decided we've got to do something about this practice, mm-hmm. and various people had looked at the practice, and so they wanted to integrate the comments, and someone, there's no evidence in the record of who or why, put ages on that column.
Yeah.
And so if there was any linkage between that chart and Kelly, the person who everybody acknowledges made the decision as to Ms. Barnett, I would take your point, but there is
what bothers me is you're in the position, I understand the difficulty, but you're in the position of defending a negative or proving a negative. The chart's there, and Kelly's there, and the chart's in the process, and Kelly's in the process, and it would seem that you would have to, it would be upon you to establish that he did not see it. And, of course, he said he didn't, but when you've got the burden, a jury may disbelieve you.
Well, but the plaintiff has the burden of showing pretext, Your Honor, mm-hmm. and there is no evidence linking that chart to Kelly. And if I may, after that chart was created, the working group had four meetings, And the people who were selected for possible inclusion in the RIF were all over the map in terms of ages. There's absolutely no evidence that, to the extent anybody noticed that chart, and there isn't any evidence in the record.
Now you sound like you're arguing weight.
Well, but see, that's the problem, I think, here, Your Honor. In essence, what a plaintiff has to do in these cases is link together evidence of discrimination with sufficient inferences that are actually reasonable, that are actually grounded in some fact. And what we have here, I believe, is trying to link things that are completely extraneous based on mere supposition. There is no fact linking these things.
We've got you well past your time also, so unless my colleagues have further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
You wish rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'll give him 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Your Honor, it's not just supposition linking the age chart to the process. When this chart was created, Mr. Moynihan wrote that it was to be used when coming to a final decision on each person. That's at Joint Appendix 51. Now, that is evidence that a jury could certainly rely upon to discredit the wholly self-serving denial from Patrick Kelly.
Now, what again would be evidence the jury could rely upon? Say it again. I'm sorry.
Yes, Your Honor. There's an email accompanying the creation of the chart, the age chart, in which Mr. Moynihan writes that it's, quote, to be used when coming to a final decision on each person, Joint Appendix 51.
But you don't disagree that Kelly was the one who made the final decision, right?
What I disagree with is that Kelly alone made the final decision.
Is there any evidence that Kelly consulted with Tyndale or Moynihan on the final decision?
There's evidence that he consulted about who to keep and who not to keep. Yeah. And that he, as Ms. Lalick said, he came into this process as a Johnny-come-lately and knew nothing about the transport staff. It's perfectly reasonable for a jury to think.
What are we supposed to do with, as your opposing counsel pointed out, the only testimony we have on Kelly and the chart is that he didn't see it and didn't use
it.
Yes,
sir.
So what
the answer is in Reeves, and that is Reeves instructs the district court that it is to disregard any evidence that the jury is not required to believe. When Patrick Kelly says,
especially when it comes from an interested party.
Exactly. Patrick Kelly is the ultimate interested party. And when he comes in and says, I didn't see the chart, just like when a criminal defendant comes in and says, I had no idea there were drugs in the glove compartment, that does not require the dismissal of an indictment. Maybe a jury will believe it, maybe a jury will not believe it, but if the jury doesn't believe it, then age is a player in this process. And then the jury looks at all of the circumstances and decides whether or not age infected the process. And the jury could look at the fact that 4 out of the 5 oldest employees were gone at the end of the RIF, and the jury could look at the fact that Judith Barnett, who had a better performance record than younger men who were retained, got terminated. And that's the kind of evidence that all of the circumstantial evidence that a jury is supposed to assess, not the district court.
We have got you past your time one more time, counsel. So thank you, both counsel, and the case will be submitted.